Welcome to the California Wealth Warriors podcast with your host, Ray Olmo, the ultimate California contrarian and believer in the salvation of our great state. Fighting in the trenches for our business owners and entrepreneurs, our California Wealth Warrior Project will share our experiences, network, and resources to reveal the California-centric planning strategies and secrets to help you protect, profit, and preserve your wealth so California can become a haven, not a burden. So unpack your bags, pull out your beach chair, and join us as we share insights, real stories, and success cases, and rediscover why California is still the Golden State.
Welcome to the California Wealth Warrior Project with your host, Ray Olmo. Ray, it's good to be with you again. You're the man most intent on saving California. I don't know anybody else doing what you're doing, my friend, but you're doing God's work in a lot of ways. Good to see you.
Well, God hadn't been looking after California lately, so I got to take over.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So when I hit church on Sunday, of course, it's going to burn down when I walk in. But
that's right. That's okay. If it collapses on top of you, I don't think that's going to happen, though, my friend. I don't think that's going to happen.
No, these are good deeds. So we're ready to rock and roll and piggyback on our previous episodes, Bill. And I have another yet awesome peer gold nugget that we dug up that we keep locked in a box. Don't let anybody get to them. But any rate, I think, Bill, don't you agree we should spend a few minutes recapping our mission statement and what we're trying to do here?
Yeah.
To help Californians and to be frank, you know, it isn't just excluding everybody from California. There's a lot of good stuff. Phil, who we're going to have on, is going to share things that people can benefit nationally. But again, with my heritage and with this exodus from such a great, which people think was once a great state, and I still believe it, we need to fight and provide these resources, and the resources aren't there. And again, we're going to beat that dead horse, is the Californians that are trying to survive and want to enjoy it. And they're the ones that have built California, the hardworking people that have broke their back with small businesses, given employees jobs, and providing them benefits, you know, and combating legislation and regulations. We got to help them, okay? And so, again, the problem is there's a mismatch for the number of people out there needing this help, the amount of small business owners needing financial help, and the limited amount of, I've been using the term advanced. I think we're advanced in thinking, but what you're going to find out is really a network. It's kind of birds of a feather flock together. And one of the things that we're going to talk about with my buddy here, Phil Kohler, is there's a whole range of people that we're going to talk about retirement. There's a whole range of people at this level, and there's very few at this level. Okay. And Phil and I play up here. So with that said, Bill, do you have any additional comments on our mission statement we should be throwing out?
No, I would just say to those of you who are listening who have not listened to prior podcasts, stay with this one and then go back and listen to the prior episodes, because I think you'll find that there's a lot of very sensible, interesting things that are being talked about and a lot of insights that you may not be aware of that you really should be aware of. So with that said, I give it back to you, Ray.
Perfect. I have another guest too. I've got my Johnny Cash mug here. So we're playing in the Ring of Fire today, baby. Right? Yeah. Live at San Quentin. I love Johnny, the man in black. All right. Exactly. Let's introduce our good friend and pal. And we've done a massive amount of good work together in the last few years. Phil Kohler. Hey, Phil, pleasure to have you on, my friend.
That's great to be here.
Yeah. So let me take the liberty of kind of setting the stage of why we locked onto you like a tick on an Alabama hound. And for you that listened yesterday with our friend Jeff Verdon about advanced asset protection for Californians, Jeff and I, when we were pioneering the California PRP, had really worked hard in trying to find an attorney that specializes in retirement plans from a global standpoint and understood all of them. And Jeff and I kept running into these firms that had this very siloed thinking, and the ERISA attorney was just dealing in ERISA and they couldn't get out of the box, and the deferred comp guy could only do this, and they couldn't, and they almost didn't talk to each other. It was very frustrating. And Jeff calls me up one day a few years ago and says, "I got our guy." He was so fired up, Phil. It's like, "I got our guy." He was like a kid in a candy shop, right? And I said, "Oh, great. Who is it?" And he goes, "His name's Phil Kohler. We got to get on like tomorrow." And so again, Jeff was so fired up about it. And I thank God that he found you. So when we got to talking with you, the first thing I would do to differentiate you, Phil, is that you really globally understand the integration and the relationship of all sorts of retirement plans. And when you look at it holistically like that, you can look at one type of plan and then you can do the risk management truly, because you understand what else is going on in other planning. If you don't, you're asking for trouble, okay? Because you don't know what that leads to from a risk management standpoint. And I don't want to take any of the words out of your mouth. You and I are going to be discussing this as we go through the different types of plan. But again, the value you've brought to us for the California Wealth Warriors is you're now the resource. If Jeff and I are using you as a resource, then everybody in California, and I'm talking about the firms that deal with ERISA, and I'm talking about the CPAs, okay, and Jeff is an asset protection attorney, and myself as an administrator, okay, and you've helped introduce us to some key people like actuaries and whatnot. So anyway, with that, I will pipe down. Why don't we do this, Phil? Why don't you give a little bio for us and, tell us how you ended up here. And then what we'll do is we'll jump into the retirement plan game and start breaking these things down and really come up with some great opportunities for our audience.
Sure. Well, thanks for the opportunity. And I guess I would have to say that I ended up spending an entire career in the employee benefits, executive compensation practice area. And it actually all began for me a long time ago when I needed a job. And the first job I found was offered to me by the Travelers Insurance Company in their home office in Hartford, Connecticut. And the job was to be a trainee as a group pension underwriter. And way back in those days, there weren't a lot of specialists in employee benefit plans in the law firms. There were very few, if any, actuarial consulting firms. All that knowledge was resident in big insurance companies. And one thing led to another, and I managed to just kind of follow a career path through twists and turns, and ultimately led to becoming a lawyer almost 33 years ago now. And then after that, of course, I remained as an active attorney practicing in this area. I had experience with large law firms and small law firms and two of the final four accounting firms, Deloitte and KPMG. I taught at a law school in their LLM practice. You know, I did a long sort of laundry list of things, all relative to how plans are designed, but also how they operate and what are the characteristics of individual companies and corporations that sponsor these plans as to why they would be attracted to a particular design or conversely repelled from a particular plan design. And then as I grew and started to understand the almost total landscape, I started to understand that a lot of things that go on in law firms, which won't surprise anybody, are dictated by law firm economics. And in large law firms, there's a kind of a pay-to-play aspect to this, which is if you expect to hang around a large law firm, you have to justify your existence by bringing significant revenue into that law firm. And in certain practice areas, normally litigation, corporate transactions, real estate, the things of that nature, that's the meat and potatoes. Employee benefit plans is relatively small. and it doesn't really generate significant revenue compared to other practice areas. So the law firms tend to look at their ERISA practices as just sort of adjunct minor practices, and they expect them to support the other larger practices. Well, if that's going to be the case, and you take kids right out of law school, and this is going to be their training path, law school, big law firm, or even medium-sized law firm, and all they know is what a large what a law firm partner has shared with them, they're going to get a very narrow, very myopic exposure. And even though they may be successful within that law firm, in terms of their actual knowledge base, it's significantly, it's insufficient to be able to go out into the broader market and start to talk to businesses who are interested in sponsoring these plans for, and understand the various reasons why they want to sponsor these plans, and understand the various ways in which you layer different programs that hit certain targets that address certain needs. It could be retaining higher paid executives. It could be addressing the needs of the ownership of the business. It could be addressing the needs to recruit new talent. You have to have a very broad exposure, everything from Fortune 500 companies and your typical pyramidal structure of their workforce to smaller startup, early stage corporations, some of which are have high intellectual capital, normally professionals in the sense of engineers, IT types. And these folks are much more interested in equity compensation than they are in a base salary bonus and some kind of 401k plan. So you got
to
think.
Let me add something, Phil. Sorry to cut you off. That you were talking about the law firms, mm-hmm. and the academia and the void for them to be able to help be constructive and integrated in thinking. But on the other side of the fence, don't forget, we also have the promoters. We have the financial industry that is cookie cutting and promoting plans to employers and saying, this is what you need to do. They themselves also are in a box and have these limitations. They get packaged up with the big firms and say, this is how it works. This is what we're selling. Go sell it to the employer, and it's not customized. And all the employer can do is, well, sounds good, and I guess let's sign up. And then the byproduct is something didn't work, and there's a lot of pain that comes with that, and a lot of penalties and issues. As you know, the owner themselves as trustees, my God, you know, we'll talk about that. But the compression between those really doesn't allow. Let's talk about our mission statement, Phil. Doesn't allow a growing path of an employer in any industry mold and modify and customize and optimize their plan as they're going through their cycles. And it's fraught with crazy danger. Okay. And again, we're dealing with some higher end things, but I think what we need to do right now, Phil, you know, to kind of hammer into it, is jump into the plan designs. You were about to do that, okay? And I'm sorry for cutting you off, but sure. We can go from the baseline plan and what it's meant for, you know, the 401ks, and then I think people kind of generally get that, but we really should talk about the risks associated with that for the owner and then highly compensated. And sure. Then as we get up, we're gonna see where the highly compensated and then where the owners can benefit and really drill down a little bit deeper into those. Do you think that's a good path?
Absolutely. One of the key features of the 401k plan is pre-tax deferrals. But of course, like any qualified, this is a tax qualified retirement plan, which in effect, from the federal government's perverse perspective, they're giving away tax benefits, tax advantages. And of course, the government's going to expect their pound of flesh back. And what their pound of flesh is, you've got to make this a very egalitarian, non-discriminatory, broad-based program. And there's going to be significant caps. So when your dust clears, when you look at a 401k plan, the higher paid and certainly the ownership of the business's needs are not going to be addressed. The 401k plan was never designed to address their needs. It was designed for rank and file. And so when if you just adopt the 401k plan, it's not very long before the highly paid executives start to express their dissatisfaction that they're running into these limitations on how much pre-tax deferral they can actually achieve. And at the end of the day, it's not very significant. So they're not really being retained if that's the goal of the company, and normally it is. So what else can you do? And one of the things—
So let's pick up on one thing and save this for our future conversation. So what Phil was just talking about, the dissatisfaction, is there's a disjoint now with the amount of earnings that they're making, what they're spending for their current lifestyle, and what they want to save for their retirement, and there's not a toolbox for them. And they start hammering everybody for, you need to give me something, you need to give me something, which leads to stacking up the qualified sector, profit sharing, right? Defined benefit and cash values, which we'll talk about. So you're trying to do this. The one thing I want to always caveat this with, okay, is that these plans for the owner are contrarian to their business and cash flow. So what a owner has to do is say, well, give me a retirement plan and I'm going to put as much as I can into a cash balance plan, but I'm writing a check for a dollar to save 50 cents, but now I'm out the dollar for my cash flow. And that's why most of our clients don't fund those things. So that they actually just don't even have a retirement plan. Okay. But back to you in terms of the deferral and the dissatisfaction at the higher things. We're going to assume the rank and file is taken care of. Now we can go on to the upper levels.
Well, what you normally don't see from the large sales organizations out there selling more or less, quote unquote, free services in the form of documentation and plan design and plan administration, you normally don't see that they're going to talk about alternatives for the higher paid executives. They're there because ever since I've been involved with qualified retirement plans, it's always been a platform for selling products. When I was very young, it was a platform for selling life insurance. It has morphed long since into selling brokerage products. And that's why you see the big Fidelities and the Charles Schwabs and the so on and so forth, and to some extent also selling payroll services. And that's why you see Paychecks and ADP and those peddling prepackaged, very minimal services. They will offer up a simple plan document and they'll provide some basic record keeping and some other basic services. But they're not there to help the ownership of the company understand the full range of options that are in front of them. The reason for that is that to go beyond the 401k plan, you're normally dealing with much, much smaller asset pools. And even those asset pools for the owner are very critical and important. It's their future wealth. From the standpoint of a big brokerage firm, like for instance, Fidelity, that amount of money is insignificant. So they're not really willing. If you can provide a large 401k plan with tens of millions of dollars of assets in it,
with hundreds of employees,
very happy to be associated with that and provide services for that. But if you say, hey, in addition, we could find another $1 million that would be used to help fund benefits just for the top paid executives in a special non-qualified plan called a top hat plan, suddenly that's not really so sexy. That's not that exciting. Now, they might be willing to do that if they felt that would keep the 401k business where it is. And you do see some of these companies say, hey, we love your 401k business because it's a big fat asset pool. We might be willing to sell you some other services and maybe even at a big discount, but you got to keep the 401k plan with us. So you see that kind of conflict of interest all the time. But what the employers are missing, what the owners are missing, is a more complete discussion of the various ways you can layer in additional benefit structures that are certainly designed to help protect the owner from the unique risks that owners face by simply being the owner and being able, through their success in operating a profitable business, achieving a high rate level, you know, level of earnings and a high level of living. So what is often missing in these situations and what large law firms tend not to understand because they don't get into these niche areas, they will reflexively throw shade on anything beyond their basic understanding of these things, because this just doesn't often come up in their normal practice. And so
our job is to bring this up for our listeners. Okay. Right. And before, Phil, we jump into this fun stuff, let's finish up on the ERISA rank and file side. And I have two comments. Number one, the taxation, which doesn't help owners, because the methodology for the rank and file is you're going to defer today at a higher tax rate. And when you retire, you're going to have a lower tax rate. Our owners and executives aren't going to do that. They're going to be opposite. So that's, again, a myth, false myth that doesn't help our market, okay, who's helping build California. The second and most important is what I found all the time when we look at these things, and I used to administrate them. We don't administrate them anymore because they don't provide that value, is let's talk about the fiduciary responsibility that the owner has for those plans for the rank and file. Could talk about that.
Certainly does. Unless they choose to engage an independent investment manager who will accept what's referred to legally as a delegation of fiduciary responsibility, then the owner, through if they have a structure where they use a board of directors or however their internal governance is shaped, it turns out the owner is going to have all of what's called fiduciary liability, which is normally associated with not providing quality, prudently selected menu of investment fund options for the participants. What normally is, and there's a long history of litigation in this area, and employers have been losing a lot of these battles. And what it comes down to is that they took advice from non-fiduciaries, salespeople, brokers who have no fiduciary responsibility themselves, and they end up selecting investment fund options for their employees, which are very high fees, when they could have selected the very same investment fund option at a much lower fee, but they didn't understand that. No one brought that to their attention, and they didn't do their due diligence when they selected it. And so when the employees, this would be some years down the road, look back at this and say, hey, my 401k plan account has suffered a significant hit here. I could have invested in the very same fund, got the same very same rate of return, but I would have paid a lot less in fees had you diligently and prudently reviewed the available investment funds, but you didn't pay enough attention. That's a breach of your fiduciary responsibility. The governing law, federal pension law, ERISA, required you to have the level of understanding of these things that an expert familiar with investments would have. And so you're left in a very exposed position. Most companies, when they sign up on these 401k plan documents that are presented to them by the typical purveyors of these services, they don't realize that right within the plan document, it will say that the fiduciary, the named fiduciary with respect to this plan, is the employer. And unless there's any formal delegation in a typical corporate structure, which is the board of directors, that the board does not delegate that authority to an independent third party or to specific individuals like a committee of employees, then each director is jointly and severally liable for the way in which that 401k plan that was managed, including the selection of the investment funds. In any successfully run business, the board of directors are the last people you want to have exposed to that degree of liability. They can't administer the 401k plan. They have many other things on their plate. And they often think that their D&O, directors and officers insurance, that they have for performing their services as a director would cover them. But it turns out it does not. The insurance companies that sell that stuff are very clear that if you become exposed to liability for the performing fiduciary services for your 401k plan, that is not the same as being a director. You're doing things which are not directorial in nature. Therefore, your D&O insurance will not cover you if you become exposed. And in a typical way in which you would become exposed is either the Department of Labor brings an enforcement action against you as a defendant, names you, and seeks to collect fines and penalties. And if you're unwilling to consent to that, they will bring a civil action against you, or a group of plaintiffs, a plaintiff or a group, and there are many law firms today that specialize in bringing class actions against employers, and they seek these funds out. The information about what your investment fund portfolio is public information. So these law firms will diligently go about looking for prime targets where they know that the investment funds the options available to your employees in your 401k plan are terrible. Yeah, they're all high fee. So they will select them out and wait, and they will approach your employees to see if they want to combine in a class action suit against you.
Yeah. And all this is counterintuitive to what we're trying to do in the first place, which is provide protections for the owner. And they aren't aware of it. So the first things that we do when we're looking to look at the employer is we go to that risk bucket and say, you're not going to be the trust anymore. We're going to go out and get an independent and cut that vein off. Okay. Right. So, and you gave some great insights to that, but let's not belabor that. I just wanted to point out that the owners don't know they have these risks. So now they do when they're listening to this. And the first thing they better do is get help or ask questions with their current providers and really find out where they're at.
Right. But no, exactly. They need to evaluate what is the value to them of the tax benefits, you know, of a qualified plan. And many times when you get down to it, it isn't much. You know, you're really doing this for the rank and file employees. And there are legitimate reasons to want to do that. But that does not meet the requirements of the ownership and the higher paid executives.
Right. So shifting that risk and having the conclusion that the qualified ERISA regulated structures are not going to provide a substantial or even reasonable benefit to highly compensated execs and owners, we then start shifting over into this non-qualified world. Right. Okay. The thing there is, everybody hears this thing called ERISA and they go, ERISA, it's protected. And we need to go over there. The federal, it's federally protected by ERISA, 1974, right, Phil?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So very one-dimensional thinking. And then you go over into now you and I are going to shift into the non-qualified sector that flips everything upside down. All right. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple different veins of those, one of which is still federal. We're going to talk about deferred comp. And the other one, which is one state that you've been very involved with us on, the California mm-hmm. Private Retirement Plan. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we are going to compare and contrast the non-qualified with the qualified and talk about ERISA versus non-ERISA. So we're on now under the non-qualified bucket. Let me suggest one more thing. The other day we had Ed Cotney on as a guest, and we were talking about structures, and we specifically were talking about structures of pass-throughs, S-corps, LLCs, and the owners weren't getting any benefit out of that because it all passed through and they got hammered with tax. Well, we do a lot of multi-structure planning. We can have a pass-through S-corp and active, but we do a lot of C Corp planning or MSO management services organization planning. And so the first thing that we need to look at is a deferred comp plan. And I want you to explain this is neutral, meaning it doesn't provide a tax benefit through a pass flow business. But when there is a corporate arbitrage of a C Corp at a 21% and an owner at a 50% tax rate, there is an arbitrage. Okay. And I don't want to tread on your expertise, but why don't you again now pull in the breadth of your knowledge, segueing from the qualified sector to the non-qualified sector there?
Well, in the non-qualified world, you're going to confront, since at least I think it was 2007, a special Internal Revenue Code section, which imposes very substantial limitations on the tax treatment of amounts deferred by an employee that's eligible for a non-qualified plan. And keep in mind, non-qualified plans are set up so that they can extend the amount of the pre-tax deferral that employees can make. However, you have to satisfy an exemption that's baked into ERISA in order to enjoy that non-qualified plan opportunity. And the only available exemption, aside from government plans and esoteric things like that, is something for the private sector, is something called a top hat plan, which means it's a plan in which only the highly paid, a select group of highly paid and management employees may participate. Roughly, the Department of Labor has been all over about this, but if you kind of distill it all down, they're thinking about maybe 5 to 10% of your work, top paid workforce, period. You can't have a broad base, and these have to be truly management individuals. They can't just be high paid sales individuals.
One thing, Phil, that you said, and we have to be very careful because I've caught myself doing it, is you said exempt from ERISA. Somebody might hear that it's exempt with ERISA. And what Phil just said, it is exempt from the regulatory body of ERISA. So it's trying to get an exemption and get away from being sucked into the ERISA void. So we want to be very clear with that with our listeners. So right. It is non-ERISA. Okay, sorry, Phil. I want to make sure.
It's actually not entirely exempt, but from the standpoint of all the onerous aspects of ERISA, fiduciary responsibility, funding the plan, vesting, all that stuff, it is exempt from. And it has a very abbreviated way. It is still technically subject to reporting and disclosure and also the claims procedures, but those are very, very narrow and normally not an obstacle to satisfy. What is required in order to set up one of these plans is the plan must confine the coverage to just this very select group of highly paid and management employees. Now, that within that group, those folks can both participate in the base 401k plan. And when they hit their limit, the low limit that's baked into the plan, they can now go beyond that and achieve higher rates of pre-tax deferral. In fact, unlimited amounts of pre-tax.
Right, deferral. Unlimited. Yeah. Thank you for saying that.
A little technical thing is they're not exempt from payroll taxes. So we're talking about just about income taxes. So they would still have to pay, even if they attempted to defer 100% of their compensation, they wouldn't actually be able to achieve 100% because they would still be stuck with their FICA taxes on that amount. So roughly around 94% they can defer if they were chose to do that. Now, the deal killer for these things, the things that when you talk to an employer about this, because on its face, you might say, gee, that sounds really great. My top paid people would love to be able to blow past these little low 401k limits. You have to tell them, well, okay, what's the downside? Number one, as the employer, you don't get a current tax deduction for their deferrals. So you could have gotten a tax deduction if you just paid them their salary. That you would have gotten a compensation expense, assuming it was reasonable. But and in the 401k world, if whatever they defer, you still get a deduction for that. So, but here we are now, we're in non-qualified plan land, and if those individuals want to defer significant chunks of their compensation, you won't be able to claim it, the corporation, the employer won't be able to claim it as currently deductible until they later on take a distribution from the plan, which of course can be many years down the road. So a lot of times—
And a much greater amount because you're deducting the growth too of that, mm-hmm. right?
Right. So that could be some degree of heartburn. The employer normally don't like that. From the employee's standpoint, what is a deal killer from them is you cannot protect assets that are set aside to fund the non-qualified plan benefits from the claims of the company's creditors. So if you attempt to shelter the assets you set aside for that purpose from the claims of creditors, you will trigger automatic income inclusion to all of the executives. So everything they thought was pre-tax will instantly be taxable to them. And obviously that's not something that would be acceptable. That blows the whole strategy. So you have to accept two very bitter pills: no current tax deduction for the employer and no creditor protection for the employee, the executive that participates in that. So that leaves the executive exposed to what is called solvency risk. The risk that the employer will become insolvent and be unable to pay you back the deferrals that you made that you could have received because you earned it as compensation, plus all of the earnings that you would have achieved on that. If the company becomes insolvent, you as a participant in the plan, with respect to just the non-qualified plan portion, you have no greater standing than an unsecured creditor. So you would just get in line with unsecured creditors, get pennies on the dollar, if anything, in that situation. On the 401k plan, by contrast, is fully protected. Those assets are completely separate from the corporation. The creditors cannot get at those assets. ERISA bakes in a creditor protection element, but it doesn't apply to non-qualified plans. So non-qualified plans, in order to give the executive the same sort of treatment or pre-tax treatment of their deferrals, you have to step away from your 401k sort of paradigm where you get current deduction and you get creditor protection and realize we're not getting those things. So in order to get to this higher level of pre-tax deferral, you're only going to get there if the employer is willing to defer claiming the deduction and as long as the company does not become insolvent. Now, most of the time, the top executives can make a prudent analysis of what is that risk. But I've worked long enough in this field to see other situations arise. And sometimes it's when buyers come into the picture. A corporation acquires the entity that sponsors the plan, and the acquiring company doesn't like this deferred comp plan, and it seeks to find ways to undermine it. And I've even seen cases where the acquiring company actually contemplated breaching the agreement and basically taking, you know, we'll make you an offer of 50 cents on the dollar or see you in court. You can sue us for breach of contract. So there are unforeseen risks out there, but it is something that you have to get your head wrapped around if you're going to participate in the plan. And that's one of several downsides of trying to get yourself that higher level of pre-tax deferral above the 401k limits.
Right, yeah. And again, the deferred comp plans tend to be oriented towards the golden handcuff design, you know, recruit, retain, and reward key people. And when you focus in on that, they can provide benefit. But this is the doorway by which we're going to shift some thinking and take advantage and take those risks that you just discussed, because I'm going to tell you a story, and you know this. I worked in the market crash era, 07 through 09, with PenCal down in Pleasanton Bay Area. They were one of the top, probably, you know, the top two true 409A deferred comp administrators in the nation. My job was to work with a small business owner, and I had a client from PenCal come in to talk to us, and I said, "Hey, I noticed you're not doing your deferred comp plan." And this guy made eight figures. And I said, "Tell me why." "Well, you know, I would rather go pay the tax today and put it in my balance sheet. And I want asset protection. Asset protection is up here to tax down here." And I said, "Oh," and that's where I had this epiphany. And this is where the story started when we shifted. And I said, "Well, you know that we can step out of the non-qualified world, you know, regulated on the federal level. And there's this little thing in California called a California Private Retirement Plan. It's after tax, but it's fully exempt from creditors on in a three-dimensional level, all funds, all distributions, all death benefits." And he locked into this like I couldn't believe it. And I, that is where I said, "Wait, maybe we're onto something." And it was fostered by the market crash, him worrying about this huge company and the solvency, Phil, right? And so whenever he's making money, you know, it's, you know, let's save taxes. But when the house of cards starts falling, it's protect my stuff, protect everything I made. And when I figured that out, I really said, "God, this California private retirement plan, non-qualified plan, is unused and untapped." A, because going back to your comment, there, you know, it's after tax. There's nothing into it for the state, okay? Mm-hmm. They're using after-tax funding. By the way, it's after-tax funding from the balance sheet, not from the income statement of the participant. And so if I'm funding those after-tax assets and they're measured and they're fully exempt, and the future growth is exempt, and then I pass it on to my heirs as exempt, it's a powerful, powerful discussion. And after that market crash, we saw the whiplash of lawsuits. You know, it didn't happen from 07 to 09. It happened 2012 to 2014. And the lawsuits were up 400%. And that's where this thing got inflamed and people started realizing that this is opportunity. So from your perspective, again, in a non-qualified and kind of shifting from the deferred comp over to the California Private Retirement Plan, because we got about 10 minutes here. Mm-hmm. Give us, you've helped us construct this and make sure we don't step on landmines. Okay. Right. Even though it's a state statute, we right. went and resourced you as, right. as really that broad-based thinker of all plans on how to risk manage it. So go.
Well, this is really where I think you're entitled to a lot of credit here, Ray, because when you're addressing the needs of high net worth individual, you're in a very esoteric territory, and you have to listen. A lot of lawyers out there are good at giving you chapter and verse, but they're not necessarily good listeners. You listened, and when you get to a certain level of sophistication, you got to step away from the cookie cutter and think and listen to what is this set of risks and concerns, anxieties that people in this situation have. They've built this wealth and they want to keep it. And sure, you think about the IRS to a certain degree, but really you look at them as they're just another creditor, and they're a terrible creditor. You don't want to borrow money from them. But once you've stepped aside from that and you're saying, I'm not even going to go there because I'm using after-tax assets, now it's the other creditors that you're exposed to. And what you have here in California, for the benefit of those that are subject to California, California Civil Procedure, just for those that are technical minded, if you want to go look it up, it's section 704.115B of the California Code of Civil Procedure, provides a creditor exemption. It exempts from the claims of creditors the assets of a private retirement plan. And it's that statutory language that is what is available. Now, what has happened, of course, in any normal situation is the courts have stepped in. The California appellate courts have issued several rulings, and they're normally bad facts. Normally, by the time something gets to a trial court, from a trial court to an appellate court, the creditors feel so strongly that they should be able to prevail that they keep on going. And so what you have there are cases of where people attempted to structure these plans on the eve of being insolvent, on the eve of filing a bankruptcy petition, and just trying to shove a bunch of assets from one side of their balance sheet over to the private retirement plan. Those are very egregious, bad facts. And sometimes the courts did not rule in favor of the company sponsoring the plan. They ruled in favor of the creditors. But when you read the cases, you see what the flaws were. So you've seen the flaws. We've analyzed the flaws, and we've come up with a strategy to avoid those flaws. In other words, what you've come up with in terms of structuring what is in effect a third-party administration company and building around this a highly defensive sort of structure of documents and administrative processes, where you can credibly claim and show and prove to a court, if the creditors are so disposed to want to fight tooth and nail, that this is a legitimate retirement plan. It doesn't happen to be a qualified plan. It doesn't have to be. The California statute doesn't say anything about qualified plan. It just says a private retirement plan. And so you've really breathed life into this so that it is defensible and rational to a court that's looking for, how can you show me that this is a bona fide retirement plan? It doesn't have systematic funding. Is it trying to achieve what the actuaries call a particular level of a replacement ratio? What is it? What is the target level of funding? How many years have you been setting aside these assets for this purpose? And you have a structure by which you, first of all, you ferret out the potential users of the strategy who are too close to insolvency to begin with. You don't want those in your mix. You want profitable, solvent organizations that are, I believe you use an affidavit of solvency. You require any client of yours to sign an affidavit saying that in good faith they're representing, that they are paying their debts as they come due, that they have significant net worth, and that they are not in any way, shape, or form near or on the eve of becoming insolvent. And so you're taking that right there clears away a lot of the pretenders out there who just want to exploit this section in the state law.
Well, we do it.
Those that are legitimately are entitled to it.
Yeah, and we do it from the integrity of the benchmarking too. So when we go back to the owner making X millions or whatever, And the qualified plan in a vacuum only provides this. We measure that shortfall and we look at the variables and we forecast and we see that void. And right. that is, okay, yes, that's the reasonable question. Well, right. everything's spilt in on your balance sheet after tax. And then what did you do? I went and bought real estate. I invest in private equity deals. I'm funding my private business. So that's your retirement. Right. Well, right. the term private retirement is exactly that. They mm-hmm. can't do it with the federal tools that have those limits. Deferred comp has some limitations, even though you can defer 100% unlimited, as you just discussed. And so we go to, well, what assets? All we're doing is matching the true assets in the right buckets. That is why you help us globally, holistically, making sure we're using all the tools. Our clients don't get, by the way, audience, our clients don't, they say, oh, can I shut down my 401k? No. That's not what this is about. Okay. This is about the integration of everything and making sure that your construct is designed properly. And it's going to change. And as you're growing, we have the ability to mold that and optimize it ongoing. I think it's that simple. Okay. But again, many people find the difficulty in it because, like we were talking with corporations, they start off one way and they think they're just going to go the next 20, 30 years in that way. And it's suicide to think you're going to do that.
Well, one thing the listeners need to know is that the non-qualified plan has no creditor protection. So as soon as a high net worth client starts talking about, I need credit, I'm worried about creditors, I'd stop talking about non-qualified. That's not the right path for them.
You're talking about the deferred comp side.
The deferred comp, non-qualified plan side.
We warn them about that.
But there's another issue here, which is that we can't represent to them that they can set up a retirement plan that it would become subject to ERISA. And it's very easy to trip over that and become subject to ERISA, because if you become subject to ERISA requirements, now you've got funding requirements, now you've got vesting requirements, you've got a whole range of things that you don't want to be subject to. So you need to find another exemption. The top hat plan won't work because that's really related to non-qualified plans and that has no creditor protection. You need a different exemption. And the only other available exemption, which is what will make this work, is what's called the ERISA owner-only plan exemption. Another way in which it's expressed by the Department of Labor is it's a plan in which no employees participate. If no employees participate in the plan, it is not an employee benefit plan by definition. And what the regulations do, the Department of Labor regulations, they take the position that an owner of the business and or the owner's spouse are not employees. So if you have a plan in which the owner and or the owner's spouse, now this only works for a sole owner, you can't have multiple shareholders. The ownership of the entity sponsoring the plan must be the sole owner and only that individual and that individual's spouse can be eligible to participate in the plan. So that would satisfy the ERISA owner-only exemption.
And that's what ours is. And you brought out that there's some people that are playing in this field, and they tend to be attorneys. And I even caught an ex ERISA attorney, and they're like, "Oh no, this is ERISA," and I go, "You're in for a lot of trouble." And or then you see the documents that somebody has provided, and it says in there that all these employees can participate or these executives. So again, those things end up blowing up. And you know, warning to the clients out there, you want to make sure if you do have these, you want to review them. You want to have pros like Philip, ourselves as the administrator, but basically people looking at it from multiple standpoints and are ensuring that these things are A, properly designed, properly funded, and properly administrated. I mean, we get to the depth of benchmarking. What's the deviation between what the plan was and what actually happened? And how does that affect the future funding? And so, again, at the end of the day, that is kind of the overview of all these different things that are moving and can freak out an employer. But the bottom line, you know, the conclusion, Phil, is that everybody wants retirement. Yeah, that's everybody's goal, right? It's not to, I want to keep working until the day I'm done and then I have nothing to show for it. Everybody wants retirement. What is your circumstance and how do you match that up to what tools are out there and give you the best chance? And again, thank you. You're a resource to really help kick open that door of thinking and think integration and coordination. And then we love all that stuff. So Phil, to wrap up, and I know Bill is going to conclude this, but any final thought from your standpoint?
No, these are just arrows in a quiver, right? I mean, and some you have different solutions for different issues and different threats, and different individuals are faced a different array of threats. And we've been talking here at the last few minutes about a specific target market that has a different sort of threat assessment than your middle management and rank and file employees.
And we're going to have you on, of course, multiple times. This is a general overview. And then we're going to look or have some episodes where we're drilling down on really some specific things. And ESOP, for example, which is quite the gorilla. I have a few clients that have had ESOPs. I know some ESOP attorneys. That's to be set aside on its own accord. You don't want to have that conversation in this realm. So Phil, thank you so much, my friend. Great to see you. We talk almost every other day anyways. And then Bill, why don't you do what you do best and wrap up and conclude our episode and set the stage for the next one coming up, which is next week.
Well, I think you did a pretty good job setting the stage already, right? So, but I do want, I don't, before I wrap it up, I don't want to get out of here without you putting out your contact information. I know that it'll be in the show notes, but just really quickly, if someone wants to reach out to you and talk to you about this a little further, how can they do that? What's the best way?
My email address is PJ, my last name, Kohler, K-O-E-H-L-E-R, at msn.com. And also my direct dial phone number, my cell phone is 714-785-1181.
Great. Ray, how about yourself?
Well, we, of course, are always at trust-cfo.com. And the episodes are with California Wealth Warriors are now launched. You can get them anywhere in social media. I saw them poke out yesterday on LinkedIn and Twitter and everything else you can possibly name. And they're also on our website. If you want to go on the website and look and access the episodes of California Wealth Warriors, great. There's also specific educational tools on there. There's videos, there's everything. So please access the website, www.trustcfo-trustcfo.com. Our phone line is 800-730-3020. We have various extensions. I'm extension one. And we're going to have many more of these. And we just hope that people get to an understanding and get some thinking going that they had not thought about before. And you know, we're not meaning to freak you out, audience, okay? Like when we were talking about that you're fiduciary for a 401k, that gets your heart palpitating, but it can be solved and it can be solved quickly, okay? So don't just ignore it and go walk away and continue to try to build your business with that risk. Just quickly solve it, and then you can move on and sleep well at night. That's my conclusion for the day.
I will add to those who have not ever listened before, this podcast is about solving problems. It really is. It is about solving problems, in particular for those who are working in California with businesses who have a high net worth. And there are solutions here you probably don't even know about. It's worth your time. So if you're not a subscriber already, hit the subscribe button. That way you will not miss another episode of this podcast. When it comes out, you'll be notified. We'd also say, hey, if you like it, you find this useful, tell people about it. Spread the word. Let people know about the war that is being waged here by Ray over at California Wealth Warriors, as a matter of fact. In the meantime, I'm Bill Tucker. On behalf of Ray and everybody at CFO Trust, I'm reminding you to go out and make today a great day. Or not. It's your choice. There's a solution. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the California Wealth Warriors, fighting for you as a productive resident of our Golden State. We thank you for your time and trust. Click that follow button right away so you don't miss out on our future episodes loaded with valuable insights and gold nuggets. For more personalized guidance and expert tools, visit our website at trust-cfo.com or contact us at 800-730-3020. Remember, Your wealth deserves California's best protection. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guests and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of CWW or Trust CFO. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for legal, tax, or investment advice. Always seek a professional advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your financial or investment planning.